Hello, you're listening to the What's Cooking podcast, where we talk to food entrepreneurs about how they got started, their journey so far, and what gets them out of bed in the morning. I'm Beth.
And I'm Kat, and we're here with Arthur and Tass, two of the founders of Brother Marcus, the Balham Cafe, serving creative dishes for breakfast and lunch and hosting a variety of chefs at their popular supper clubs. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Do you want to introduce yourselves and maybe tell us what your roles are within the cafe?
Yeah, so I'm Arthur, and my role is I'm very much behind the scenes within Brother Marcus. I would, if I had to give myself a fancy title, I would say I'm operations director. But I just make sure things are legal and make sure that like bins are taken, or not very well at the moment because we're having a disaster with that. But and then make sure that like everyone gets paid, basically. I'm sort of, yeah.
Essentials.
It's a bit more than that.
An invisible force, yeah.
It keeps us all together.
Yeah.
Somewhere. And I just basically do the menus. I'm joking. There's, when we first started, it was Arthur and I in the kitchen. And we'd, from there on, Arthur moved out and started doing all of the logistical stuff. And I kept that running. And now that we've got a great team behind us, I'm more work together with the chefs to make sure that the quality is as high as it was when we first started, and we're constantly pushing what brunch is for us.
Yeah.
And trying to just consistently, as a team, bring the cafe to a whole new level.
Yeah.
Brother
Marcus, the best it can be.
What does Alex do?
Alex is the front. So Alex deals with front of house. He has a back. Well, he, by trade, is an actor. So he was also a waiter for
professional liar.
Yeah, he's, and he basically is in charge of making sure that the staff also are as good as they can be, and he knows, and also he's an incredibly talented barman, so he knows exactly how coffee should taste and how cocktails should look and how everything, and he's got a keen eye for that. But that's his role. And he also does loads and loads of other stuff. It's also unfair to sell Tass as just a guy who works in the kitchen.
And makes menus.
Yeah, prints menus. But
yeah, there's so many different parts of your business, I guess. Yeah.
You have to be all-rounders coming into this.
Yeah.
Business wasn't, I was more of a creative coming from a food photography background. So that did help tie in with the chefing and making things look great and being on point with everything that is produced. I have now become someone that is incredibly knowledgeable in the finances of the business, what works, what doesn't, and we can tell quite simply, as soon as like a recipe is designed, it's like, okay, this is how much it's gonna cost, that's how much we're gonna sell it for. Are we gonna make any money? No, we're not. Can we sell it for this much? No, throw that whole recipe away, start again. And it's a constant thing, you know? It looks good to the eye, tastes good to the mouth, but as a business,
it's gotta work.
It's gotta be profitable as well.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And how did the three of you meet?
So we met, what's the year, 2000? Yeah, we're 10 and a bit years ago at school, and we, at sixth form, yeah, we were all friends at school, and then we all went our sort of separate ways after school to university and art college and
so acting. Alex did acting, I did photography at Edinburgh.
And I did like a really boring degree in Brighton.
Go on, call it his name, man.
It was history, politics and culture of globalisation. It was, yeah.
Now, if any of you readers out there know what that is, please let
us know. I still don't know, but it was a waste of time. But yeah, no, we, after uni, I worked for a brand consultancy and didn't enjoy it. And so I quit. And then the three of us were all bored of working for other people. And we decided we needed to do something.
Coming out of university, I bumped some mates at a festival. And they started up a street food business selling pizzas. So studied photography, came out. No job prospects. So I started helping with them. And it turned out that I had quite the knack for
seeing the
bigger picture of making the pictures and being able to understand quantities and stock and being able to streamline a process within a team and just be able to make it turn over more.
We also had quite a lot of fun at quite a lot of festivals working.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, it's about having a lot of fun, and it's also about working very, very hard.
Yeah.
And you don't work harder than that, really.
Well, street food. Yeah. It is. Festivals, working street food and doing festivals is is literally like the you get to an end of a weekend and it's just the most.
And you realise you have to drive home.
Yeah, the amount of times I've been in a car with Tass and looked over and Tass is just asleep. Mate, we've got to stop. And we're like, we'll get there. that's happened a few times. But yeah, we did
so
that.
So you worked for the pizza company together?
Yeah, before I got the job in the brand company I worked for. Mm-hmm. The pizza company, and also whilst I was working there, I also did like.
Although it's not called the pizza company, it's
called Fundy Pizza. They're the best pizzas in London.
Yeah,
they're wicked.
You'll find them at Dinorama.
Yeah,
also at Camden. They work within Curb.
Yeah, and they do all the Curb. Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah, wicked.
How did the conversation for the cafe come about?
The way it started was the name came first. So Alex has a brother called Marcus, and Alex has a funny way of saying things sometimes. And he would always, because Marcus is a bit of a rugby lout, and he'll always do something stupid. So every week, we'll be like, Alex will come to us like, so my brother Marcus did this, my brother Marcus did that. And we're like, we know he's your brother.
Yeah.
Like, we know who else is called Marcus. And then it evolved as though, like, we're going to start a business, it's going to be called Brother Marcus. We had an idea that it would just be on everything.
Yeah, I'd quit my job at this point, and I was working, working in a catering kitchen, which was great. But it wasn't what we wanted to do. And we literally went down to Alex's mum's house, who lives in, she lives in Surrey. And
we were looking on a website called Appear Here, seeing spaces and seeing what we could put in it. And we were like, right, we'll get this on the Strand and we'll sell Segways.
Yeah, we were literally about to put in an order for like a thousand of those like hoverboard things. And then we were like, this is a bad idea, which was lucky because 2 weeks later, they all got like, they're all starting to explode, so it's a good thing we didn't do that.
And on Appear Here, we saw a site that this mate from university was running in Shoreditch on Commercial Street. And I called him about seeing him doing a pop-up over there with the idea of trying to take it over. Got there, we started the process of signing over the lease to us. We were able to get on a very affordable price. And then we started discovering problems with the building and it being owned by such massive conglomerate that
it just got very, very...
at any point.
Yeah.
The basement was going to flood. The basement was flooded and will continue to be flooded unless we sunk a lot of money into it and we chickened out.
But it's interesting because that site, as soon as we didn't do it, they turned it into the thing that we wanted to do there. So we just basically did a load of free food consultancy. Or consulting.
Which is great.
Which is cool to see.
Use my creativity to make
someone else quite a lot of money. It's basically like a souvlak, like sort of Cypriot, soup like big souvlaki, like wrap things, but and it looked really cool, but I never went.
Like gyros, which is what they have now, and then that's now shut and turned into a little greasy kebab. So God knows what's happening over there.
Yeah.
Until they shut it down again for the basement being flooded.
Lucky escape.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, we were going to ask you about the name, so that's covered.
Yeah.
I think that leads us on to Brother Marcus, I think. Because after that, the next site was...
Yeah, so...
The next idea, we were just sitting there going, like, we've done all this work. We've come away with absolutely nothing, apart from a bit of knowledge on how to, like, design a restaurant on 3 bits and A4 pieces of paper.
Yeah,
and then we've got a family friend in Balham who, they have a restaurant. And they're getting ready to retire, or they should have been. And my mum went to visit them, and I was like, "Mum, get them to give us the restaurant."
Literally,
she came back that night, said no. And I was like, "Go try again, go tomorrow." So she went the day after, and she came back with the good news that they'll be thinking about it, and we started the negotiations from there.
Yeah, and then we very quickly realised that we needed to.
We didn't have a clue what we were doing.
Yeah, there was, I think, between. It was January when we were like, okay, we've got this space in Balham. And then it was sort of back and forth. And then I think we confirmed in March. Then we got the keys. I can't remember if we opened
the keys April the 22nd, or was that the Wednesday?
I think that's when we opened the April 22nd.
We got them on a Sunday.
Yeah, got the keys on a Sunday.
We did all the prep beforehand. We built all the tables in the cupboard. We had a budget of £9,000. Put everything in the cupboard, we were counting screws and how many screws we could put in each table because we couldn't afford screws. And we got the keys on Sunday, took everything out that we didn't want, put everything in that we did want, built some shelves, finished off the bar, cleaned the kitchen 3 times over, and printed off some menus, put everything in, opened half the restaurant on Wednesday, and the rest on Thursday and Friday.
Wait, so how many days after you got the keys?
4 days.
three, and on £9,000.
Yeah, on £9,000.
And we didn't have money to. We didn't have the money to pay for the
We literally
the next Monday.
We were at the like on the Friday. I said, well, if no one turns up this weekend, we're just going to have to close because that was it. And people had to come, and then they did come, and it was all right. But we basically couldn't afford more than a week's rent without trading, basically. And we had to. So that weekend we did. What was it, half price food and £1 coffee or something like that?
Yeah.
And people did
very,
come.
Very hard. And so by Friday, we realised it was three of us. By Friday, and a friend helped, April.
Yeah.
And by Friday, we realised that we needed an extra 5 staff.
Yeah. So we had a guy who used to work at Caravan, and we used Caravan Coffee. And the guy, who Alex knows from Caravan, he came and helped us. And he on the Friday, he was like, guys, you're going to need more people this weekend. And Taz goes, no, just work harder. And I was like, no, we've got to listen to his advice. And then we ended up like having more people, but I think
we
still work very, very hard. But it was like, I'd never experienced anything like that. Saturday was outrageous. Like,
so at that point, did you have kind of enough stock and supplies?
Stock was fine because basically we signed up. We did a load of research before. We'd have people coming into to the house, telling them we're going to open a restaurant. They'll deliver samples to us. And would sign up 2 people, so our veg suppliers and so on and so forth. And then from Tuesday and Wednesday, we were getting in the deliveries ready for the opening.
So there was a section sort of like cordoned off in the cafe where we had food deliveries like put in, and like we started putting stuff in the fridge. But yeah, it's quite, if you want a load of free food, just pretend you're opening a restaurant, because suppliers will just come to your house and they will drop off. It's like vast quantities of food. Like we were at Tass's house, and we just get deliveries every single day of different breads, like different wines, like all sorts of different things. And we knew what supplies we were going to use before. We were quite organised. Had we not been organised,
it's important for anyone to do that, because
yeah,
there's no point selling something you're not 100%.
Yeah, we weren't.
Because if you get good ingredients in, then you know, treating those ingredients with a bit of respect and a bit of knowledge, the output is going to be so much better than starting off with really crap ingredients.
Yeah, and we had really good suppliers at the beginning. We've still got some of the same suppliers who are still really good.
And then you start developing relationships with those people.
Yeah.
And you know, someone will come knocking on my door now and then and ask to supply us and give us cheaper prices. And sometimes I just don't want to pay less. I want to deal with a person over and over again and know that if I ever have a problem with what they've just delivered, that it'll get replaced the next day, or knowing that if I need something new to come in that he doesn't stock, that he'll be able to, like, you know, in a couple of days go out on a hunt and find that, because we've got that relationship and he knows that I'll be selling it for the next 3 to 6 months until the menu changes. Or
yeah, it's cool. Like, I think we realized even before we'd started, when we were doing street food, you realize that this industry is actually quite a friendly industry. Like at sort of this level, I guess. But
unless things go wrong, then your patience wears thin.
Yeah, that has happened.
No, you're right though. It is. We find that too.
Yeah, people are
across
willing
the
to,
board. Really, everyone's really.
So many people are willing to like give you advice, like help you out. I mean, the Fundy boys like were like helping us the whole way through. Our friend Lily, who runs Steakhouse, is another street food. She sort of helped us out. And so she did a residency in our first couple of weeks, which sort of was good PR and also good for her as well, which is good. But yeah, everyone's willing to help out, which is good.
We were going to ask you about the provenance of your food. So you've got it on the menu where some of your ingredients are from. So clearly it's very important.
Yeah, we've always been quite sort of clued up on provenance. And actually, even when I worked for the job I had before, I remember doing loads of sort of brand presentations, and it was all about provenance. And I think you do now know. I mean, you go into restaurants now and they've got big pictures of where their food's coming from, and it's just so much better knowing. And where
there's also I think, because we do use good ingredients, people always ask us, where do your eggs come from, where does this come from, where does that come from? And you'd always be telling them, and it's, you know, it's something that we are proud of, and we do put it on our menu for people to see, and that's the reason why. And say for our eggs example, we discovered them through a very high-end food supplier called Natura. recipes, charges an absolute fortune for them. So you can even buy them. You can buy them in Waitrose. They're called St. News. So we found one of our suppliers to go and pick the eggs up every Wednesday, and you know, we wouldn't change them for anything. We love their eggs. The colour's rich. It's something quite special, and that's just one case of me helping the supplier connect with loads of other cafes, which, you know, there's some part of me that kind of hates it. Other people are using the same eggs, but it's, you know, it's, we use their eggs and we love them, and they'll carry on, you know, they...
Yeah, even from the beginning, like, in terms of, like, we started using Estate Dairy very quickly, who are great.
That's unhomogenised, yeah. Organic milk.
Yeah, and so that... And they're also brilliant, and they supply like all of like the so many independent coffee shops, and they're really good, and they've grown so much in the last couple of years. They're now doing like chocolate milk and like and all sorts of crazy stuff. But and then who else? We are meats. Most of our pork comes from Dingley Dell Farm, and has done since we took on our meat supply, which was
about 2 years ago. we have the things. Our meat is all British. Sausages, all British.
Yeah,
which is something that's also quite important.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's too. Apart from avocados, our food mileage isn't that bad. I think, which is quite good.
We kind of lie to ourselves about that by saying it's all locally sourced because it just comes from a local veg man called Mick down the road.
Yeah, those local avocados.
Exactly.
Yeah,
which is great because we have a real personal relationship with him. He goes to the market. Does his shopping, will come back and report to us. If there's anything slightly wrong with anything, he'll fix it straight away because it is literally down the road from us, like a 2-3 minute walk. So you know, we support the small guys, and we feel like by doing that, we're able to get a much more personal touch.
And also better produce. There were some big suppliers we sort of entertained, and actually they're not as good.
It's just the quality control. When you're dealing with such, we're probably going to find that one day when we expand, is the more that comes in and goes out, the less control there is over it. And that's what big companies find. So being able to deal with a small producer, you're able to get a more hands-on approach to every ingredient that enters your basket has been touched by the guy who runs that business. So it's not just being touched by people that work there that don't care about their job.
Mm. Yeah, they care as much as you guys. Exactly. And then that will come across in the food.
It's interesting you say about the avocado thing.
Yeah.
Because we were talking to another cafe and she was saying that from a business perspective, you have to sort of balance that with as kind of what people are expecting.
Exactly, yeah. There's an element of that. And actually, when we started, it was like, we're like, all right, avo on toast, like, and avocado played a massive part in our menu. And it's still, like, there is still, obviously, massive demand for avocado on the brunch scene. But actually, in the last 2 years...
Quite quickly,
we've sort of moved away.
There's the ethical side, but there's also, it's cost an absolute fortune.
Yeah, it does cost, they are ridiculously expensive.
We tried to create a unique menu that has the Brother Marcus stamp on it, but we removed avocado and started adding more to different ingredients that would still class as still breakfasty.
Yeah.
What those are, off the top of my head, I can't remember.
Right now. We should have a menu in front of
us. It's, you know, it's, for instance, our fritters do have it. So our recent thing is adding a dish called the Yummy Mummy, which is completely vegan. So what we've done with that one is we make our own hummus and we use that as a base. Toasted sourdough goes on top of that with some black quinoa, roasted cauliflower on one side, and then on the other we've got a butternut squash, habanero nero, and cannellini bean hash.
It was delicious.
Yeah, lots of ingredients in there, which is unusual, I think, for a breakfast dish.
Yeah,
it's normally very two or three ingredients.
How many ingredients is the kitchen managing now?
Total, stock-wise, you're probably looking at about 240 with the dry goods, which is too much. But
it works.
It works. It does mean that our fridges are full pretty much all the time. So the capacities that with the amount of people that come in and out of the shop. But, you know, we're pushing with something something that's great, you want to come to Brother Marcus and go, okay, I've just had something that's delicious, presented beautifully, but also executed just amazingly.
Yeah, I think that dish especially is like the most, probably the most, well, Instagrammed one.
So before that, the Yummy Mummy used to sell hardly any of it. What was on it?
I can't remember.
Still had the hummus on it, but
it still had hummus. And it had avocado, actually. It didn't used to have avocado.
That was it.
And I can't
remember. And a tomato salsa. It was a bit summery. And, you know, we just took it off.
And improved.
And added more delicious things that, like cauliflower, that haven't travelled.
But also, being vegan now has, like, suddenly in the last few months, like, gone nuts. And we, like...
Which I'm going to openly hate about.
Yeah, you get it.
I'm gluten-free and vegan and, you know, and it's...
It's difficult. But, I mean, vegan, like, I've got no problem. Like, yeah,
I fully support it. But the way food has developed up to kind of this point and a couple of years ago, it's made vegan options very, very... hard to come by, and as a chef designing a menu that is vegan is, you know, goes against, because I'm a meat eater, I love meat, love full fat milk. I find it hard to design things, but then when you nail it and you know that people enjoy it, it does make you feel good.
Yeah.
Well, dishes like that, you know, it's so delicious. It's not necessarily about the fact that it's vegan, it's almost incidental that you haven't used animal products, but you've created something that's really flavoursome and has...
Yeah. I like that when you look at a menu and there's like, it's not we can do a vegan version, it's when you see something and you're like, oh, actually that looks really good, and then it just happens to have VG next to it, you're like, that's good.
I think that's one thing is, you love soy, you love the alternative milks, whereas I don't. I sometimes think people should just leave certain products alone and stop trying to make an alternative version of it, but actually focus on just making something new.
I used to agree with that like wholeheartedly, but now I'm actually coming around to the idea of if you can make something as good, then why not go if it's a more
as good as our personal opinion, isn't it?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, like all the lab grown meat. If you can make me a steak that tastes like a steak, I will eat that. Like if it's the same thing, I'll do it. Like it's fine. It's
without the impact on the environment.
Yeah, exactly. It's like perfect.
The most
like,
easiest one to do when you're saying that would be the foie gras.
Yeah, foie gras. That I was watching something recently. They were saying that
it's delicious.
the first thing they'll be able to do perfectly is foie gras because it's got no like structure, like so it's just a paste essentially, and they'll be able to make that perfect, and it'll be lab grown, which I think is genius.
That's very interesting, and morally and ethically as
well. Yeah, it's just like blows it out of the water.
Yeah,
because it's always the texture.
You would want it fried with
a bit
of butter in a pan, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you're really into it. You can have soy butter. Yeah.
Does your menu change seasonally? How often do you change the dishes?
Well, we used to change them quite often, but we've reached the point where we've found ourselves. And now we keep our core dishes,
and we can adjust seasonally,
and then we adjust things around it.
Yeah, so there are certain ingredients that obviously become inaccessible or like
our salad changes seasonally.
Yeah.
The Yummy Mummy, as we discussed, changes seasonally because it's veg based.
Yeah.
There's
the brother special normally goes. So at the moment it's sesame glazed broccoli. And that varies throughout the year, so it depends sort of seasonally.
I'm not sure what we're going to go with next. I like to give that decision, like when we do change something, because we have created our core and they sell very well, and it'd be stupid to change something that is not, trying to fix something that's not broken. And that's where we kind of like ask our staff, ask our chef, start bringing their ideas into it.
Yeah.
Because trying to come to a place that's established and trying to make a change is actually quite important to the staff. So being able to give them that decision and, you know, turn it into more of a playful experience where they can give you suggestions and you go, yeah, that sounds amazing, I want to see it. And then they come back with you with something great or awful, and then, you know, you push it a bit further. So what's going to be next? We don't know,
yeah.
But
we vary
leave that to the chefs.
Yeah, the small plates that are... they vary a lot. I mean, that's also people's tastes like throughout the year change, so sometimes we won't sell, like we will hardly sell any.
We want to try and start, one idea I have for the sides is bringing some fermented stuff in there, whether we, I don't know about kimchi, but maybe doing our own take on something like that. So there might be a lot of experimenting in the next few weeks to try and come up with something like that. I've never made it myself, but I'm really looking forward to exploring it.
I think kimchi is one of the coolest things, like in terms of taste, is like the coolest ingredient or thing. Like it's so good. It's hot. It's spicy but cool at the same time. I don't
care. That's another thing we try with our food. Like as talking about kimchi, it has its therapeutic qualities. We like to use herbs. We like to use spices. We like to use them in conjunction with other things to elevate our dish. Like, you know, so say we've got a stepsister, which is a sweet potato courgette and feta fritter. We add turmeric to Greek yogurt and turn it into this brilliant yellow colour. And, you know, it's an anti-inflammatory. It tastes amazing. It looks incredible. And, it just tops the dish off perfectly.
How do you develop your recipes and what inspires them?
Instagram. Massively. So you look through something, you go, oh, that looks good. And yeah. Okay, how could I...
How could I
change that and make it unique to myself? So say something like the French toast, sugar French toast crumpets, cinnamon French toast crumpets. I was just looking through Instagram. I knew we needed something new because we used to make it with brioche. And it was just so hard to control. It just burned too easily. And to be able to expect chef or like one of our young cooks to be able to execute it perfectly every single time was a challenge. And I was looking through something and I just looked one day, just like looked at these crumpets on Instagram. I was like, God, they look delicious. And I was like, French toast crumpets, this would be incredible because they've got the holes in them. And we gave it a go and it just worked beautifully. And then the next point is like, right, we've got the base, what do we add to it? And that's where you start asking the incredible staff around you, incredible kitchen staff, to be able to give their own ideas, whether they've seen something here, seen something there, what they've seen on Instagram.
We try not to... Nothing we've got on the menu is just sort of put straight on the plate sort of from the supplier. Like we used to use smoked salmon and now we cure our own salmon. And we used to, like with the Marcus breakfast, we used to just use baked beans and now we sort of make our own beans and stuff like that. So it's always, someone gave us some advice, like never change anything for the sake of changing it unless it's going to improve it. So just, always think if it's going to make it slightly better. But also, in terms of our food, we also made a decision last year. We were like, right, let's take advantage of Tass's background more, which is Cretan. And so there's sort of stuff like creeping in with the hummus and the in terms of the Bob's Your Uncle, which is the pork belly in a Cretan pitta. Like there's a few little influences that are creeping in sort of here and there, which is sort of...
Well, if you go back slightly, the whole Antipodean movement with branches, so you've got that influx of the Greeks, the Italians, kind of Mediterranean Europeans that go over to Australia.
Yeah.
And then they've got the Asian influences coming in as well. And you're combining all these cultures in a place and they're starting to express themselves through food. And I feel like going into the brunch scene, like being able to do something Antipodean, I'm also bringing it back slightly to more...
To just actually straight back to the Mediterranean. Straight back to the Mediterranean. Yeah, instead of just doing the Australian style stuff. Mm. Which we tried to steer away from, like, because...
It's not us.
And there are so many other Australian style cafes around that you can...
You know, they will make sweet corn fritters. When we first started, it was like sweet corn fritters, that is not us, we're not Australian, you know. Yeah. We took it back and it's like, okay, where did those fritters come from? You've got the courgette fritters that are like so Greek. So we added a few more ingredients to that, threw in a bit of feta as well, because everything's made better with feta. And we've got a unique product.
Which we think that maybe some people have copied, but I don't know.
But it was fine. Yeah. Saw on Instagram just like we do, and that's it. The stepsister is our best seller.
Yeah, the fritters.
And in terms of building a team and finding your chefs, has that been a challenge to find people who will represent your ethos in the way you want?
Yeah, I think in terms of running Brother Marcus, the most difficult thing is staffing. Getting good staff and consistent staff. In the last 2 years, we've developed a really good kitchen team. And we've actually just, in the last 3 or 4 months, taken on a new head chef who's fantastic.
We lost this incredible girl called Helena, who's gone to Canada to do some chef. If you're listening, Helena, we miss you. Come back.
So we lost her. And so actually there's been a few vacancies in the kitchen, which have now been filled, but we had a few weeks of being like, oh, this is interesting. Like, because chefs, like good chefs, are impossible to come by. Like London is, there is a deficit. Like there's not enough staff. And also like front of house as well. Like the nature of this business is that like staffing, like it is transient. If you work in a cafe, like you do it for a little while. So maintaining staff who work in a cafe, who you can train to know exactly what you want them to say about the food, and who are willing to learn about the food, and who are as passionate about Brother Marcus as we are,
basically
is the most difficult
thing. In the same way that people move, if you're not a move away from us because they've got another opportunity or whatever, the same way if you come to us, you're not passionate or you're not keen to learn, you're not going to last very long at all. And we Brother Marcus relies on its staff, relies on them being the face, relies on as soon as a customer walks in, they have eye contact with someone. And we've had to create systems, we've had to create a little booklet that just, you know, you just sit new people down, new staff down, and just tell them this is what it is, give them the reason why we do it, because it, you know, it's always nice to engage them into it. And then, you know, you will be training at least, unless you're like an incredible experienced person, you're going to be training for at least a month until you just know everything. And you know, if you leave a week later, sometimes it happens, it's an incredible waste of time, but also it's an incredible waste of time, but also we've had someone quite great for that time.
I mean, we like staffing is a headache, but I think at the moment we've actually managed to get a really good Brother Marcus team, and I can't fault them at the moment.
And we even started a football team.
Yeah, got a football team.
Five-a-side, play every Tuesday.
They lost last
night. We called Murder on Zidane's Floor.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully things like that bring
are you guys team part of the team?
Together. I'm injured, so I'm out. Otherwise, we wouldn't have lost so badly. But,
it's all Alex. He's got two left feet.
Yeah, we had our first match yesterday, which was apparently not very good, but yeah.
Alex, that's on you, man.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about funding as well? You did touch on that. You started.
Yeah. So we started on that. Like we pooled our money, which was £3,000 each.
Yeah.
We started off at £2,500, then we realised actually we need an extra £500, and managed to like beg and borrow for that extra £500. But I literally, that was all, like, everything I had. Like, I don't think any of us had any more than that. We were very, like, and people go, what's, like, £9,000, how have you done this? And, like, I don't think had we not been in that situation and lucked out with the site, it's not
possible. £9,000 is impossible.
Yeah,
to replicate that again. We've been trying for so long to try and replicate that. It's impossible.
Yeah, it's not possible to do it.
Yeah, you probably normally need in the region of about 300,000 in total to be able to do it again.
Yeah, such a different way, way more.
So we were lucky. We were seriously, seriously lucky. And we were very grateful for the opportunities that have come to us.
Yeah. Yeah, no. We know that we're lucky in terms of that.
You use those opportunities well.
Mm. Take full advantage of them.
Yeah.
And in terms of challenges, how has kind of the reality of having a cafe differed from your perspective of it when you were planning it?
I did, in terms of my sort of expectations, I didn't think it would be as difficult.
So we put in a girlfriend situation, because I had
the best girlfriend.
I was with my girlfriend.
Yeah, this is good.
About 6 months before opening Brother Marcus, but it was you, Arthur.
Oh yeah, I was clever. So I literally started going out with my girlfriend like the week that we started Brother Marcus. So she's known me with Brother Marcus. So if I, like, she knows that I can have to run to Brother Marcus. Sometimes I just have to go, and she used to be quite good about it. Now she's kind of had enough of it. But when we started, Tass was in our first
this
week.
This was your first week.
Yeah, and to be fair, like, we were ridiculously busy. But he comes, like, I was standing behind the bar, and he walks back. Like, he kept on walking back, and be like, man, I feel like I've forgotten something. Like, I feel like I'm in trouble or something. And he walks back. He's like, it's George's birthday. Like, it's George's birthday. And I was like, oh my God, you are in so much shame. She was in New York.
The next day, we went to open the doors. It was like, we can't open until I send the flowers.
Yeah,
and Alex and Arthur just said, no, we're opening. I'm like, No. There's no point living if I get this bit wrong.
But in terms of personal time, I mean, I remember the fact like, I knew we were going to do like put long shifts in, but you don't realise what like a lack of time off does to you. Like, I remember it was like 3 weeks in that I had my first day off, and you suddenly like, oh, this is nice. Like,
don't know what to do with this.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, I literally. Basically, I think I went to Richmond Park and walked around by myself.
And you've been visiting Richmond Park religiously.
My little sanctuary.
So there's three things. There's you've got your girlfriend, you've got family, and you've got friends. And all those three things, when you have a 9-to-5 job, are manageable. But having a job where you work about 100 hours a week, always with, you know, having that in your, always having the business in your head, and also knowing that even if it is your day off, you can get a call saying this has happened, that's happened, you're the only person that can fix that, means that all those three things can never
work perfectly. Yeah. Just doesn't work.
We'll always suffer, and it's really hard accepting that.
Yeah.
And just got to accept that sometimes someone's going to be pissed off with you now.
But I think
send
that's
the flowers.
Yeah, send them flowers the day after.
Yeah, but then they turn into flowers. All of a sudden, they stop working. Yeah.
No, I think in terms of expectations, I didn't realize how much running a business would consume your entire life, which isn't a bad thing either, because it makes you passionate about
it. Does
the work.
Get easier,
and it does. Yeah, and also where
and then it goes into waves. Yeah. You start noticing that some months you've got no time for anything or anyone. And other months, when everything's just working beautifully,
you sort of quietly step away.
You can do the things that you want, and then all of a sudden, with no warning, it's like bang, you're back into it.
Yeah.
So you've got your peaks and troughs of craziness and not.
What kind of obstacles have you faced within the business?
It is the business stuff. It is the business side. There was a certain time when we realised we weren't making as much money as we thought we were making,
suddenly.
And then being like, NI tax, what's that?
Yeah, like, I mean, I didn't, like, when we started, like, I remember a friend's dad being like, what about VAT? And I was like, shh, like, don't know what that is.
Don't
need to know about that. And
it's
then,
like, it's not your money.
Yeah,
the VAT is not your money.
Yeah, so that's, getting fully legit in terms of accounting, now I've literally, as of this week, we've handed it over to our accountants, like all the bookkeeping stuff. But that is an obstacle, because suddenly you have like tax bills to pay, which we've always been able to do it. But it's suddenly get like a little bit of a sort of scary, you get scary moments of being like, right, we need to like rein things in, or like we need more supper clubs just to sort of boost things. But we've been lucky in terms of there haven't been any like massive curveballs thrown at us. Like, and there's been no point where it's been like, oh, I don't know if like we're gonna shut down or anything like that. We've always been.
We're lucky. There's three binds. We're not stupid, and we can see things. I hope we can see things coming.
Yeah.
And we constantly pushing each other to do more and to be able to get more out of the business, because there are three of us in it. So we need it to be able to cater for all three of us. Someone's missed something.
It'll get picked up.
It's quite quickly picked up.
Yeah.
And we do make each other feel bad for not being out noticing it.
Yeah, 100%.
You're an idiot!
If I'm not like the biggest obstacle is sort of ourselves and learning how to work in like the three of us. I mean, actually, we're not bad together. Like, we don't argue like too much. Like, we
have our moments.
Yeah, we have our moments, but we're still friends. And in terms of our personal lives, like our friend group is like the three of us, and then there's like five or six other people. So it would be really awkward if we weren't friends. Like, it would just ruin everything.
It's nice going home though, and then just, you know, not seeing them again until.
Yeah, like holiday. You're like, oh, I'm quite glad I'm not seeing Tata Alex for a couple of days.
So at the cafe, you serve breakfast and lunch, and then you do supper clubs in the evening.
Yes.
So what was the decision behind doing the supper clubs rather than the evening?
So
I might go for this.
Oh, I'll go for it. Yeah.
So what I found is London is quite an amazing place, which gives a lot of opportunities to people within the food industry to be able to express themselves. And we've had that through street food. We've seen people go through it. And we know that we don't have the time or the capacity within the kitchen that we have to be able to accommodate an evening concept.
There's no room to put an evening concept in, Brother Marcus. We don't have a big enough kitchen and there's not enough fridge space.
We're sitting on a site that can't operate in the evenings, but has tables and has a following. So we started doing these residencies where we'd bring in other people, and then we were introduced to this website called
Design My Night.
And what it enabled us to do is to have a platform for Brother Marcus to be able to host chefs and be able to, a platform to be able to connect customers with these new chefs that haven't been as fortunate as us to be able to have their own site. So by doing that, not only are chefs connecting with consumers, but also, and to test their recipes, but also we have just learned so much by meeting these people.
Yeah, you see these awesome chefs come in and you're like, well, we might, you look at some things and you're like, let's steal that.
There's other things you're like, oh, but you know, it is a test bed for food, and you know, if we can help them push food in London further, and if they can help us do it, then London as a whole and England as a whole is benefiting, because it was only 10 years ago that London was the worst place.
Worst place for food to ever eat.
And then got the explosion of street food, which is some incredibly talented people producing one thing very, very well. And then all these nice niche little restaurants that are opening, just expressing themselves within food.
And do you usually approach people to collaborate with on the events, or do they come to you?
We used to have to push it, send emails to people and ask if they would like to do things. But now we're at a point where you just get the odd email being like, oh, I'd love to run a supper club, and you get them in and you try their food. And
but not everyone and anyone can come and
no,
do it.
We're fairly strict about what comes through. So we always say, can we try your food first? Because it's sad when you have an evening which has happened once or twice.
Sometimes these are experienced people that have done them over and over again, and they come and you just see it and you're like, no, this is just not us, because it's our name on the door.
Yeah.
And there's other times where someone comes in and they've never done one in their lives.
And it's
and
insane.
You try their food and you're like, oh my God, this is incredible.
Yeah.
Here you go, the kitchen's here. And we've got one lady, Sophie Alexander, and she's got a Burmese supper club. And I've kind of helped along the way. She's never been in a commercial kitchen. She's never catered to 40 people in one go at that sort of at that capacity, at that sort of level. So it's, you know, I'm also teaching her how to be able to send 40 plates out all at once. The cleaning standards, the food hygiene standards in regards what do you do once you pack down a kitchen and things like that. And it's through the knowledge, because we've been doing it and being able to cater for those people, because we do supper clubs ourselves sometimes as well.
Yeah.
It's being able to give that knowledge to other people and helping them streamline and helping them realise.
They're also just really fun as well. They're fun things to work out.
Great energy from them.
Yeah.
And do you guys kind of host the night?
No, we don't. We make we don't host the night. We
we're tired by that. By 4:30, we're knackered.
Yeah. So there's always one of us on the bar. That's the part of the deal. You get one of us there, and we make sure that once people are sat, we're like, you guys have to come out and talk to everyone, which some people hate doing, and some people are really good at doing. But
it's kind of part of the supper club, isn't
it? 100%. And also people at supper clubs are willing to suffer a little bit. You can make them sit on a table for six people, and you can get
people they don't know,
and they'll sit with people they don't know, and they don't mind that. So if you could but they only don't mind that if the atmosphere is really good. So you have to get it going a little bit. But most people are good at that because they know, they have
some
to.
Some people don't know. They come just 50-year-old women and her husband will come in and they just expect something that's just not going to be there unless you go to a 70 quid a head meal somewhere.
Some people don't get the supper club thing, but But I mean, we normally convert them by the end of the night.
Oh, I don't know. I've had some time.
yeah, we have had some. Okay, like, you're just not going to
enjoy it. Oh, yeah, so. You want to send 3 bottles of wine back that all taste the same because you think you're on the Alps.
Yeah, like.
No, you can't do that here. I'm sorry. Drink the wine.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah, like, I promise.
What do you do if you taste someone's food and you're like, this isn't great?
Oh, no, you just say, I'll be in touch with you later on.
And then you just don't.
Say, oh, you're not. Or someone has to do it. It's always like, someone has to do it.
Are you able to give constructive sort of feedback on it?
We do give feedback in the sense that, that won't work because your price point's wrong and
yeah.
the quantity of dishes that are coming out are wrong and the menu that you're trying to propose is not achievable because we have these specific plates and you knocking out this dish with that dish, you're going to have to clean 40 plates before you get the new batch.
It's very helpful.
So it's being able to, that way, yes, but I won't sit there. Critiquing your food.
No, like, I think that's like, we'll do that when we want them there, but like, we've only had a few people come in and you go, oh, actually, I'm not quite sure about that. But, I think it's
not our place to say.
No, I mean, we're not food experts.
Not here, but I will help you nail it. And I would take pleasure in helping you.
Yeah, it's very generous.
Smash it in the best way you can because
it's
our name on it. And they're mainly our customers. And they...
And also, if like normally like people come in with like the most amazing food, like
yeah.
you just like I want people to eat this.
And
like.
There's one that Arthur and I absolutely love. It's called Eastern Block Party, and I don't know why their tickets didn't sell because we tried.
I have a feeling it was like the best food I've had in so long. Like restaurant quality food cooked by these two guys, a girl and a guy, and they it's just like. Eastern European food, but
with a North African twist because they live in Peckham.
So and we were so annoyed that it didn't sell any tickets. But I think it's because sometimes people don't like. We've obviously got a following, but people are only so interested. Our followers are only going to be so interested in a certain amount of supper clubs, and you have to. The people themselves have sometimes don't realise that they need to do a marketing push as well. But
I want to have their food again.
Yeah,
I want that one to work.
So how do you guys, the three of you, kind of structure your weeks? And do you have a typical week or does your schedule and what you're working on kind of change?
A typical week is it not working out according to plan.
Yeah, things going wrong and you're just like dealing with
just
it.
Just got to accept that you're always...
Like, oh, cool, man, I'm working Sunday. Like, sweet, again. But and it's all been thrown up in the air now because the bookkeeping has been taken by somewhere else. But I normally... Monday, I say normally, it sometimes happens. Monday, I will do all the invoices and stuff and then go from there. Basically, we always have a meeting on Tuesday, which is either, which is like our strategy meeting, and we look at the report from the previous week, and so that's that. And then it's basically just everything else.
That meeting dictates a lot of what happens because we were told quite early on that if you don't measure it, you can't manage it. And that applies to everything. So we try and measure as much as we can. That is to the point that how much food we're selling, what food is coming in, what food is going out on a plate, what food is going in the bin, you're measuring your waste, all that stuff. So then your task... Every weekly, you can see what's going wrong.
It's essentially responding to that.
Responding really quickly because if you leave it 2 weeks or leave it a month, all of a sudden you're dealing with the fact that the supplier has been charging you for something but hasn't actually been charging, but hasn't actually been delivering it. Or, instead of putting 75 grams of avocado on each plate, we're being overly generous and putting like twice the amount. All of a sudden your avocado consumption is going up by 2. So it's all these things and over 240 ingredients, and just imagine the amount of control that's needed.
Yeah, basically that Tuesday meeting defines how the rest of the week goes.
Yeah.
We're quite strict about taking, not quite strict. We try to take 2 days off a week, and we're quite good at that now. And
it goes back to the pigs and trotters. Other times,
you just have to work the whole week.
Other times you might get three, and you're grateful for it.
I mean, we are. we normally will either work at the cafe, or sometimes that's not that productive because people are constantly asking stuff. So we'll either work at your house, my house, or Alex's house. But no, it's structured to a certain extent, but it is defined by how the cafe is doing at that point in time.
There's always something to do.
Yeah, you never have there's always a list.
And you've kind of touched on this a little bit already, but how do you manage your own sort of well-being?
Not very well. Yeah, I've got fat. Like, I used to be really fit and skinny and like cool. And now I just like... I'm still quite cool, but I'm injured. Don't do any like exercise, but I think we're getting back on it. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's literally looking after yourself. You suddenly like, you're like, oh man, I am so like, and you end up eating crap. What I did. Like, because you spend all day in a cafe and there's food everywhere and you come back after work. And between Tooting Broadway and my house, there is every single fast food chain ever. And I just cave every time.
Yeah,
when you're tired, it's really hard to make.
Like, I love McDonald's.
Decisions.
Like, McDonald's is probably my favourite restaurant. Like, if someone had to actually push me on favourite restaurant, McDonald's would be in the top three. Like, 100%. Consistently great.
Yeah, I find it really hard to let go of something. So if I've got work to do, I will crack on and keep doing it, and then find something else to do that I didn't plan to do that day. All of a sudden, I've just done things that I don't actually need to do. And if just look at it and just step back, did I actually need to do that? No. Does it matter if it doesn't get done? No. Would it be good if it was done? Probably. But who's assessing me on that? I'm the only person I'm the only one that's who's going to tell me if I don't do it? No one. And it's being able to just say, no, I'm not going
to
do that.
You kind of have
even
to
though
weigh
I really
up.
Want to.
Yeah, you have to weigh up.
Hard.
Do I need to do this right now? Or can this be...
Yeah, as a friend of mine...
There's a lot of things that the answer to... There's a lot, about 80% of what we do. No, you don't have to do it.
Yeah, just
but
chill.
Should you do it? Yes, you should. And is that the reason why we've got so far? Yes, it is.
Mm.
And will we have to continue doing it? Yeah. But there's certain things. It's just like, you know what? Why didn't you let it wait an extra day?
Yeah. But then suddenly, the nature of the game is that then you've got 10 more things to do.
And then the next day you're super
you're
busy.
Like, oh, I have there's a chefing mentality. You're in there, you've got a prep list, you do that prep list. Prep list finishes, I've got 2 hours in my shift. I'm going to bash out a bit of tomorrow's prep. Because you know there's a means, there's an end. But then Brother Marcus does not have an end. Brother Marcus is open 7 days a week.
Yeah, that
will be forever.
That's a weird thing. Like, where every other part of my life up until Brother Marcus... There's always been like little projects, so like at uni, like school. And then when I was working, like in an office, like you'd always have projects. Whereas this, there's all you have to like realize that there might not be light at the end of the tunnel,
don't go in the tunnel.
Yeah, just don't. Yeah, exactly. Just don't let yourself get into that dark place, and don't think of it as a tunnel. Yeah, because there is no light at the end of the tunnel because it's always open. But you just start looking forward to sort of like. You plan holidays and like
you realize you can't
like,
go.
That's it. Then you realize, oh, like, maybe I can't do that. But it's managing.
There is no tunnel.
Yeah, but a friend of mine said last year, he was like, "Have you managed to have any guilt-free time off?" And I was like, "No." Like you always think, you're like, "Oh, can I? Should I have done this? Should I have done that?" But actually, I think I then made a sort of like conscious decision. To go away and not think about it and be like, right, and every time I do go away, which isn't like we don't like go away a huge amount, like you just get everything done and then that's it. Like you're like, right, I'm off for like 4 days. And then you have like anxiety attack like the day before you come back because you're like, this is
that's like people's normal Sunday, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You just get the Sunday, you just suddenly like fall apart, and then it's all right actually. But.
I think that space can add so much value.
Yeah,
having that space 100%. Away creatively, especially as well.
Mm. I find that with staffing, we've all worked the 70-100 hour week, and back onto that thing, just try not to commit as much of your time to it. Is we try with all our staff is you will not do double shifts. You will try not to work extra time, so we have caps on how much people can work, and the whole point of that is if you have like a rest, if you have time off. You will come back and hopefully work that 30% harder because you're not tired. You won't make mistakes that are going to cost time. It's about being more efficient with your time. And it's, you know, knowing that, all right, I'm going to go home, I'm going to sleep, I'm going to do 8 hours sleep, I'm going to wake up, I'll be able to produce error-free work for for quite a while, which, you know, in the grand scheme of things, saves a lot of time.
Okay, so finally, what does the future hold for Brother Marcus?
Well, it's quite exciting.
Number two!
Yeah, hopefully, hopefully, if everything goes to plan, we'll have a second site quite soon. But, I mean, touch wood and everything. But we've almost signed on the dotted line with a new site, in which is in Angel. And this will be open all day. And so
and
we'll be putting
night.
Yeah, all day and night, in fact, yeah. And so we'll be putting our evening menu, or testing our evening menu. Well, no, we've already tested our evening menu. We will be putting it in, and hopefully it'll all, in the next few months, like, watch this space, we'll have a new site. We'll probably have killed each other as well. One of us, like, might.
One of us will be dead.
Yeah, Alex is not going to make it. But
that's so exciting.
Yeah, it is quite exciting, but it's like, we're at a stage now where we're trying to step out of Brother Marcus One and try and get it to run itself. And it seems to be working.
Well, it is working, but you just got to accept that it won't be as good.
With us, yeah. It is weird. Like, when we are there, it does, like, better, but that's just, I think that's, you literally can't employ someone to be an owner of it. Yeah, you can't employ yourself. And so it's like, we're just trying to make it as good as it can be. And then I think as soon as we sign on this line for the next site, I think the 70-hour weeks are going to come back, and we're basically sort of making contingency plans so that those 70-hour weeks, we can deal with them. And Brother Marcus in Balham it works by itself, and we don't need to spend too much time there. And it's only sort of trivial problems that we'll be dealing with. Yeah, it's gonna. I think because we've all managed to sort of, we now manage to work sort of 5-day weeks at the moment, which is actually quite nice. But I think it's suddenly gonna change. We're gonna have to work a little bit harder.
Is your new site, is that gonna have a bigger kitchen?
So
50% of the site, and actually less than 50% of the site is for customers.
And the rest,
60%
is
back of house.
Yeah.
So we've got storage, we've got fridging, we've got a kitchen, we've got a bar. Got decent toilets.
Got an office. Like,
got an office.
Yeah, and it's like an actual restaurant.
We've
not
got beer taps.
Yeah, like, yeah. Well, we looked at the plans. We got these plans, and we're like, oh, it's just. And we just had the plans for the ground floor, and we went in there, and we were sort of looking around. And we were like, maybe they don't have a basement, like, and we just couldn't work out how they operate a restaurant.
Yeah, I looked at the plans more, and I just texted them. We'd be like, it's a weird little corridor on the left.
Yeah,
does that go
downstairs?
It's the size of stairs.
Yeah.
It's got to be stairs.
Or it's just a very, very packed cupboard. But it turned out to be stairs, and there's a whole basement full of prep space and storage and everything. So in terms of running a restaurant, hopefully it'll be a little bit, it'll work.
Oh, well, we will.
Yeah, you'll be on the invite list.
Watch out. Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll definitely watch out for that. That's so exciting.
Yeah.
Well,
so people can visit Brother Marcus in Balham,
yeah,
and soon in Angel.
Yeah,
where else,
hopefully.
Where can people find you online?
So Instagram, we're like super, super
Brother Marcus _.
Yeah.
We've got a little weird _ at the end.
But yeah, Brother Marcus _, that is our social handle on all things Twitter, Facebook and Instagram.
But now, we've been over 2 years, but if you just Google Brother Marcus, we will come above the American chap.
Yeah, Reverend Brother Marcus, I think, is his name.
Can I get
I think we've got more followers than him now, which is good as well.
Oh, well, guys, thank you so much. That was great.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us on Instagram at What's Cooking Podcast, Twitter at What's Cooking Pod, or drop us an email, thewhatscookingpodcast@gmail.com.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe and leave us 5 stars.